All right, Hebrews chapter 12. If you want to follow along with me, we're just going to read the first few verses here. It says, "Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls." Several years ago, I decided that it was time for me to get in shape. I had reached what I thought of at the time was kind of middle age, and I've learned that since then, middle age just keeps following me. The older I get, the more I just feel like I'm still in middle age. But at that time, you know, I just wasn't feeling very good. In the middle of the day, I just felt lethargic. I felt sluggish. My lunches were sitting in my belly like a rock, and I thought, you know what, there's just something wrong. I just don't feel the way that I should. And I realized, you know what, I've been very athletic, you know, growing up. I was always involved in sports, but now I was working a desk job, and I was sitting around all day, and my age was catching up to me, and so I just wasn't feeling good. And so I began to realize that I had to do one of two things. I either had to give up carne asada burritos, or I had to start exercising. So I was weighing those two options, and neither of them were really exciting for me, to tell you the truth. But the burritos won, and I decided that I was going to join a gym, and I was going to start getting my body back into shape just to earn the burritos. And so I remember the first day that I went to the gym, I decided to get on the treadmill, and I programmed it, you know, to go at a moderate pace, a nice steady run, and I was going to run for 2 miles. I figured that's a good starting point. Okay, I haven't done this in a long time. I used to be able to run and not have a problem with it, but, you know, 2 miles, I should be able to do that. So I set it, started going, and I started into my trot, and I got about a quarter mile into it, and I'm now starting to sweat a little bit and breathing a little bit hard, and I'm thinking, okay, it's working. Okay, this is good for me. I got to a half a mile, and I began to feel that my lungs are now opening up into areas that had not received oxygen in a long time, and there was that burning sensation, which it wasn't pleasant, but I thought, you know what? No pain, no gain. This is good for me. And I kept telling myself this. This is good for me. This is good for me. I kept running. I got to 3/4 of a mile. And I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but my gums began to ache. And I can almost feel my heartbeat in my gums. And that didn't feel good at all. And I thought, you know, I don't know if I should continue on. But to tell you the truth, I was just too embarrassed to get off the thing at the time because, you know, I had people on my left and my right, and they saw that I only got on the thing like 3.5 minutes ago. I was just too embarrassed now to get off the treadmill, so I thought, you know what, I can do this. I can do this 2 mile thing. I got up to a mile, and I was now really hurting. And I, with all of me, I wanted to get off the treadmill. But again, the embarrassment kept me running. I finally got up to a mile and a quarter, and I felt awful, and everything in me wanted to quit, and I had reached the point where I don't care how embarrassing it is, I'm getting off this thing, and I turned the thing off. I got off the treadmill. Have you ever wanted to quit? Have you ever quit? Have you ever reached a point in your walk with the Lord that you decided that you had had enough, that you were too tired to go on, and you wanted to quit? You know, there are many people in the church throughout the years that have decided that they had reached the end of their Christianity. They had run for as long as they could, but they had reached a point where they just didn't feel like they could do it anymore. They wanted to abandon their faith. They wanted to quit the race. And maybe it isn't so much that they no longer believe the things that are in the Bible. They just didn't feel like they could live up to those things anymore, and they walked away from it. I want to ask you a question. How many of you right now can think of somebody that you know that at one point was walking with the Lord that today is not walking with the Lord? Just raise your hand. Okay. How many of you could name at least three people or more that right now are not walking with the Lord who used to be walking with the Lord? Okay, a little bit closer to home. How many of you could acknowledge right now that you have, during the course of your walk with the Lord, taken times where you walked away and were no longer following after? A lot of us fall into that category. A lot of us today, we know somebody who at one point was walking with the Lord that right now is not walking with the Lord. The truth of the matter is the Bible describes the Christian life as a race, and that we are to begin this race the day that we give our life to Christ, and that race is not going to end until the day that he calls us home, which means that it is not a sprint, it is an endurance race, it is a long-distance race. And we have all had the experience, either ourselves or knowing other people, who sometime during the course of their race have decided that they have had enough of it and they abandon the race. They walk away from the Lord. Some of them for a period of time, and yet we see them return. Others, maybe they have left for years, and to this day, they have still not returned. Many fizzle out over a period of time. They started it with joy. They started it with excitement, but today they're no longer here as a part of the body of Christ. This was not only an issue back then, it is an issue today. And it's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this passage here in Hebrews chapter 12, because we all could name people that we know that were one day walking and today are not. And that was an issue that was going on back even in the first century church. Because the book of Hebrews was written to a specific group of Hebrews. These were Jews who had given their lives over to Christ, but many of them were now growing weary or discouraged in that race. In fact, that's why at the end of verse 3, the author of this book tells them that he is writing these things lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. Why would he write those words unless he knew that there were some of these Jewish believers who had become weary and discouraged in their souls? In fact, this is not the only time in the book of Hebrews where the subject is brought up. Because even back in chapter 2, we had only gotten into the second chapter of the book when it opens up there saying in verse 1, therefore we must give the more earnest heed to the things that we have heard, lest we drift away. Why is he saying that? Because there were some that had drifted away. So the question is, why today are there those that have committed their life to Christ who at some point became so weary and discouraged in their souls that they began to drift away? It happened then. It is happening today all around us. And it's a curious thing because we know by experience, those of us that have given our lives to the Lord, that when we first became a follower of Christ, it was probably the most joyous time in our entire life. You had suddenly begun to experience a peace in your life that you never knew before, a contentment, a joy, a love, a sense of the grace of God and the goodness of God being poured out on your life. Who could ever walk away from that? Who could ever get to the point where they're so weary, so discouraged in their soul that they would decide it's time for me just to drift away from what I used to think was going to satisfy me, what I used to think was going to be all that I ever needed. But now I'm too weary to continue in that way. I'm too discouraged. I think it's just time to drift away. One of the reasons I think that it happens is that we might have bought into the idea that when we gave our life to Jesus, that somehow life was suddenly going to turn to bliss, with very few, if any, problems at all, And whatever problems we do face, we're going to get over it very quickly because Jesus loves us. He's in our life. He's going to make our life great. But then you get several months into your newfound faith in the Lord and find that sometimes the struggle that you're having now as a Christian is more difficult than even the struggle that you had before you were saved. And part of the reason is because you are now going in the opposite direction of the course of this world. You're now trying to live your life swimming upstream while the world is coursing downstream. You're trying to go in a direction that is opposite to them, and that is a struggle. That is a battle. In addition to that, you still carry around in yourself your old flesh, and your old flesh could care less about the things of the Spirit. In fact, in Galatians chapter 5, we're told that the Spirit wars against the flesh and the flesh against the Spirit, and the two are contrary to one another. And you get a few months into that, and you realize that, okay, I've given my life to Christ. It is great to know that my name is written in His book. I'm going to go to be with Him forever in heaven. I have His love. I have His joy. I have His peace. But man, this life can be hard. You know, Jesus said it was going to be that way. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, enter by the narrow gate, because wide is the way that leads to destruction, and there are many who go in by it. Because narrow is the way, and difficult is the way that leads to life, and there are few that find it. Jesus Himself said it was going to be difficult. So it shouldn't surprise us that following after Jesus is not only the most glorious and blessed thing that we could do with our life, it is maybe even also going to be the most difficult thing that we will do with our life. Because we will daily have to battle our own flesh, and we're going to have to battle a world who does not care about the things of God. I want to draw something out here of this passage before we really begin to dissect it, to illustrate to you what we may not normally see here, reading it in the English, but it does come out in the Greek. Because there in the middle of verse 1 of chapter 12, we read the part of the verse where it says, let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. The Greek word for that word race is the word agona. What does agona sound like to you? Agony. You know, that is exactly where the English word agony comes from, is the Greek word, which is translated here grace, agona. Let's substitute that word in there. Let us run with endurance the agony that is set before us. How fun does that sound? Now, I'm not trying to illustrate that to follow after Jesus is agony, because I don't believe it is. But the word literally, which is translated race here, literally in the Greek means to struggle. To struggle. So we are to run with endurance the struggle that is laid out before us. The Bible clearly tells us that when you give your life to Christ, it'll be the greatest thing in your life, but it will also be a struggle because the battle is real. And because of this battle, there are many that get to the point where they do become weary and discouraged in their souls, and they decide that, you know what, maybe this is not the life for me. So how can we make sure that we not only begin this race, because I know many of you here have already begun your race, how do we make sure that we're going to finish the race, that we don't become one of those casualties, that we're one of those that follows the Lord for a period of time, but at some point we just grow too weary, too discouraged in our souls, and we just begin to drift away? Well, there are several things that are found here in this passage that I think are going to help us out a lot. And the three things that we're going to be talking about are these. I'll let you know what they are, and then we're going to take a look at each one of them. The first is it is going to point to us to those that have run the race before us. Because in looking at those that have run before us, we're going to gain some encouragement. Then we're going to be looking at how we can run the race now in a better way so that we don't become so subject to being weary and discouraged. And then the last thing is that we're going to look at how Jesus ran His race. We're going to look at who He is and what He did in His own race that changes everything. So let's begin by taking a look at how others before us ran their race. Notice what it says here at the beginning of verse 12. It says, "Therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses." Now, what is that talking about? Well, first, it begins with the word therefore. And the word therefore always is going to propel you back to what he has just been talking about, which means chapter 11. Now, we don't have the time tonight to really dissect chapter 11, but I will let you know a few things about that chapter. Chapter 11 of Hebrews is known as the Hall of Faith. The reason that it is called the Hall of Faith is because it gives a history of so many of those old saints from the Old Testament who ran their own race during their own lifetime and were able to finish their race and go home to be with the Lord. Now, the chapter is about faith, and it even gives us a definition of faith there in verse 1, chapter 11, verse 1. It says that faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Jump down to verse 6, and it tells us that without faith, it is impossible to please God. And then the author of Hebrews goes in and begins to go through the Old Testament and tell us about all of those familiar names to us and how they ran their race. It talks about Noah. It talks about Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. It goes into the life of Moses and David and some others and talks about how they, in their own day, in their own age, believed in God, and because they had faith in God, were able to run their race. Now, some of them experienced great victories in their life. Others of them had to make great sacrifices in their life. And some of them even suffered in great ways because of their faith in the Lord and because of the race that they had to run. In fact, I want you to look at a few verses just to illustrate what I'm talking about. Look down at verse 32, jumping back to chapter 11. 11 of Hebrews, verse 32. "And what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak, and Samson and Jephthah, and of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens, women received their dead raised to life again." Man, that's a lot of victory right there. But notice it goes on. "Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. Still others had trial of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, they were tempted, were slain with a sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy." Right there in those verses, we are told about all of those saints from the Old Testament, how they had run their race. Some of them, great victory. Some of them, great sacrifice. Some of them, great suffering. But all of them ran their race, and they finished their race. I want you to know something, that these were not like superhuman guys. These were not somehow on a spiritual plane that is unattainable for us. These were normal men who simply had put their faith in God and through the course of their life had to go through some very tragic things, some deep struggle, and sometimes great victory. But all of them finished their race. And when we jump into chapter 12, they then say, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses," all of these Old Testament saints, you know what I get a picture of? I get a picture of them all now in heaven. They finished their race. And they're now looking down from the kingdom at all of us who right now are running our race and are just cheering us on, saying, "You know what? We did it. We finished our race. And God was with us all the way through our race, through the struggle, the times that we were discouraged, the times that we felt defeated, the times that we wanted to quit. We finished. you guys can finish. And I tell you what, there have been some very discouraging times in my life when, as a Christian, I was looking at what I was going through and just feeling, honestly, very sorry for myself. Why is it that I have to go through this? Why is God sending me through this battle? And then I get reminded of some of those in the Old Testament and how they ran their race. And I almost get embarrassed because I think of my suffering as being so great. And then I think of some of the things that they went through. I wonder if in heaven we'll ever have a chance to sit around a fire. Fires are just great for conversation. Sit around a fire with some of those Old Testament saints and just hear them share their story of what they went through during their lifetimes. And then they all turn their eyes to me to hear my story. And I get too embarrassed because of how lightweight my suffering has been compared to theirs. You know what? I have found on occasion that when I think about them, it encourages me to continue on. Because I think, you know what? If they can do it, and the same God that they followed is my God, then I can do it too. You know, anytime you get weary, think about all the saints that went before you, that endured their sufferings, that made great sacrifices. Yeah, they had some victories too. But they persevered and they continued on. And that's what our attention is first drawn to. But that's not where it leaves us. It's not just keeping our attention on those who ran before us. We also need to look at our own race too. And so verse 1, it also goes on to say this. Since we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. You know, it tells us that we're to run with endurance. That word endurance means a steady determination to keep going. But the truth is that there are some things that will wear down our desire to keep going. You know, the race itself is difficult enough, but the truth of the matter is that some of us are making the race more difficult than it has to be. It's hard enough. Jesus said it was going to be difficult, but why would we make it harder than it has to be? But this verse is telling us that there are some things that we do that actually make it more difficult on ourselves. What does it say? It mentions two things. It says weights and sins. I want to talk about the sins first, because this really is kind of a no-brainer. What it basically is telling us is that we need to set aside those sins in our life that basically are dragging us down. In fact, the verse goes on to say that they trip you up. Those sins in your life are going to trip you up. Now, you know, we know that sin is any violation of God's commands. Anytime that we do something contrary to what God has laid out in Scripture, that is designated as a sin. And we know that we're supposed to repent from those things, we're to forsake them, turn away from them, and so forth. But the truth of the matter is a lot of times we don't lay them aside. We keep a few of them. We will repent from some, but there are a few that we like to keep close at hand. They're our favorites. I refer to them as pet sins. And usually the pet sins that we have are the ones that nobody else is really aware of. So they're not going to call us on it. They're the things that are a little bit hidden. We keep them low enough under the radar so the people around us can't really detect them. And because nobody else really knows about it, we don't really make an issue of it. But the truth of the matter is that sin is going to trip you up. It's going to weigh you down in the race. Why is it that you become weary and discouraged? Because you keep carrying around that pet sin that you think is not that big of a deal. But the truth of the matter is, it is a big deal. And I'll tell you why. Because though nobody else knows about it, you know about it. And the Lord knows about it. And when you know about it, and you know God knows about it, as a Christian, you are walking around with a guilty conscience that is weighing heavy, heavy on your heart. You know, I think sinning Christians are probably the most miserable people on this planet. because they know what they're doing is wrong. They hold on to it because for some reason it's got a grip on their heart. But instead of forsaking it, they just keep it under the radar so nobody else notices. But the believer knows about it, and the believer knows that God knows about it. You know, David was real candid in Psalm 32 about his own struggle when he was hiding his own sin. Psalm 32 was written after he had finally repented of his sin that he had committed with Bathsheba. But in the psalm, he is reflecting back on how it felt while he was hiding that sin, that pet sin in his life. And this is what he said there in Psalm 32, verse 3 and 4. He said, "When I kept silent, my bones grew old through my groaning all the day long, for day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My vitality was turned into the drought of summer." You hear what he's saying there? He's saying, God, while I was hiding my sin, while I was silent about it, your hand was heavy upon me. And I felt like my bones were just aching inside of me. And my vitality, that meant his strength. He said, my strength was turned to the drought of summer. Guys, it is not easy to carry around a sin that nobody else knows about when you know full well that God knows about it. It's going to weigh heavy on your heart. It's going to dry out your bones. And no wonder you get weary and discouraged in your soul. No wonder you have the temptation of drifting away. But that's not where he leaves us. He doesn't just talk about the sins. He also talks about the weights. He says the weights and sins which so easily ensnares us. Okay, well, we know what the sin is, but what in the world is he talking about when he mentions the weights? Lay aside every weight. Those weights are things that maybe don't fit into the sin category, but are things that you are carrying around that are just making your race harder to run. I'm a backpacker. I love backpacking. And anytime I get an opportunity to go on a backpack, which isn't all that often these days, I go. And several years ago, I was with a group of friends, and we had gone up to the Eastern Sierras to go on this backpack. And if you've never been backpacking, you need to understand that weight is a huge issue. The weight that you carry is a huge issue. And I was warned even before my very first backpack by a friend I was going with. He said, don't bring anything that you absolutely, absolutely can live without. Only take what is totally necessary. I didn't fully listen to that, and I paid the price for it. You know, avid backpackers will even take their toothbrush, and they will cut it in half just to save the weight of that 3-inch piece of plastic. Because when you start putting all these things in your backpack, it gets heavy very quickly. So a few years ago, I was with a group of friends. We were on a backpack up in the Eastern Sierras, and the hike in was pretty brutal. I mean, it worked us hard. But by the end of the day, we got to our final destination, and we spent about 3 days up there, and it was great, you know, by a lake, doing some fishing, relaxing, recuperating from the great hike. But the night before we were going to hike back down, we're all sitting around the campfire, and everything that's going through my mind is, I got to do that all over again. I got to hike back where we came from. And it was brutal coming in, and my pack was going to be just about as heavy going out as it was coming in, so I knew that the next day was just going to be brutal. So while I was sitting there, and everybody's just talking, chatting, I got up out of my seat, I went to my tent, I came back and threw a pair of jeans on the fire. Everybody looked back and said, what are you doing? I said, I can't stand the thought of carrying those things all the way down this mountain. I'm just not going to do it. And one by one, everybody else at the campfire, they went back to their tents, and everybody started grabbing everything that they thought they could live without and started throwing it on the fire. We had a great bonfire that night of all the stuff that we just absolutely didn't want to carry down. Because the reality of it was this, is that, yeah, we brought it up because we thought it was so important. We could not live without whatever that was. But when we got to the top of the mountain and realized we got a lot farther to go to get back home, that stuff was just not that important. And the truth of the matter is sometimes we are like that in our walk with the Lord. We are carrying around things that we're saying, it's not a sin. There's nothing wrong with what I'm doing. Okay, maybe the Bible does not say that that is a sin, but I'm telling you right now, it is a weight. It is something that is heavy for you to carry. Now, what am I talking about? Those things that maybe you are spending an awful lot of time doing, that is doing nothing for your walk with the Lord. It's doing nothing to help you, the relationships that you are having with your family or your friends. It's just that added thing that you spend a lot of time thinking about, maybe spend a lot of time spending money on it. You spend a lot of hours with whatever that thing is. And you always fall back on the notion that there's nothing wrong. The Bible doesn't say that this is wrong. The Bible doesn't forbid it. Okay, you got me there, but is that thing weighing you down? Is that keeping you from the things that you should be doing? Because a lot of times what we begin to do is we sacrifice our time that could be spent in our daily devotion, because we're spending too much time with that other thing that we think is so important. We're skipping going to church services because we got to put in a few extra hours at the job in order to buy the new thing to put on the thing that we want to spend our time with. You guys understand what I'm talking about. I had a conversation with a friend of mine a couple weeks ago. He's a guy that I've known for years. He's a Christian, and in the last several years, his walk with the Lord has not gone all that great. And he was just kind of confessing to me at the time, you know, about his struggle. And he's now coming back. He's realized his mistakes. But one of the things that he had mentioned to me is he said, you know what, I spent a lot of time doing things that just did not matter at all. And I neglected my wife, and I neglected my kids, and I neglected my walk with the Lord. And I started to drift away. Now, the things that he was doing were not sins. He told me the things that he was occupying his time with. There was no thou shalt not in the Bible in regards to these things, but these were weights. These were things that were holding him down. You want to get weary and discouraged in your soul? You keep carrying those sins and those weights. And you'll find very quickly that the Christian life is going to get really hard, but you're making it harder than it has to be. That's why we're being told here, lay it aside. You don't need to carry that. That sin is not helping you in the least. That weight is only making your walk a little bit more miserable. We need to lay those things aside. We need to forsake those things to make our run a little bit easier. And then he finishes up by giving us the one last thing and the most important thing. Verse 2, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. You know, where you are looking when you are in a race is very important. If you're running a race and you're looking for your family in the stands, you're going to lose that race. If you're running in a race and you're trying to look at where the other runners are in comparison to where you're running, you're going to lose that race. If you're running and you're looking down at your feet just to see how your pace is going, you're going to lose that race. You want to win the race? You need to look at the goal. You need to look at where the finish line is. You need to look at where you are running if you're going to win that race. So we're being told here, where are we to look? You look to Jesus. But then he tells us several things of what we are to see when we look to Jesus. First, we need to see who he is. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. That word author could also be translated originator. And finisher could be completer. So what he's basically saying is this: Jesus is the originator and he is the completer of your faith. When you look to Jesus, you are seeing the one who started your faith, and you are seeing the one who is going to finish your faith. You know what that tells us? It tells us that what Jesus started, Jesus is going to finish. You guys understand that? Your walk with the Lord is not all about how you are going to make it happen. And if you walk out of here thinking that, you're going to miss totally what it is that I'm trying to get across to you. Your faith was not started by you. Your faith was started by Christ. He is the originator of your relationship with Him. And if He started it, has He put it now in your lap to finish it? If He did, then there would be legitimacy to a lot of people abandoning the faith. But the reality is this, as we're being told this, what Jesus started, He's going to finish. I'll tell you what, if you go into my garage, you're going to see a boatload of stuff that I started and I never finished. But everything that Jesus starts, He finishes. And if Jesus has started a work in you, I want you to know, no matter how weary or discouraged you get, no matter how defeated you feel, Jesus is going to finish what it is that He started. Many of you are familiar with Philippians 1:6. He who began a good work in you will complete it on the day of Jesus Christ. I am so glad that my walk with the Lord is not dependent upon me. It is dependent upon Him. Now, that does not mean that I have no responsibility, because He has entrusted to me. It is my job to lay aside every weight and sin. But I am not going to get to heaven because I'm the one hanging on to Jesus. I'm going to get to heaven because Jesus has put me in the palm of His hand, and nobody can pluck me out of His hand. I can't even pluck me out of His hand. He is the author of my faith. He is the finisher of my faith. And what Jesus began in you, He's going to finish. But that's not all that it says. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross, despising the shame. He endured the cross. He endured the cross. You know what this is telling us? Is that Jesus had His own race to run. Jesus, when He was here on earth, was sent to earth by His Father to run a race. And Jesus ran that race. And it was not an easy race. It was not free of difficulty and struggle and battle. But He ran that race, and that race was directed towards the cross. And when Jesus got to within a day of that cross, His struggle got very real. I want you to turn over to Luke chapter 22, and I want to share with you a passage where where Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane the night before He would be crucified. Many of you already know how real the battle was for Jesus in that garden. Because there in the garden is when He was face to face with a reality that within a day He was going to bear the sins of the world on His own shoulders. The sinless Son of God was, for the first time in all of His existence, which was eternity, was going to experience the wrath of God upon Himself for the sins of the world. That's a heavy weight. And so as He was in that garden, He prayed. Notice, though, His prayer. Verse 42, saying, Father, if it is Your will, take this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but Yours be done. Then an angel appeared to him from heaven, strengthening him, and being in agony, he prayed more earnestly. Then his sweat became like great drops of blood falling to the ground. Here in Luke, he prayed, "Father, if it is your will, let this cup pass from me." In both Matthew and Mark use a different word. He said, "if it is possible." And I imagine Jesus being there in the garden, praying with such a fervency, "Father, if there is any other way, if it is possible for us to save the souls of these people in any other way other than me going to the cross, let that be so. Nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done." Notice, though, it also says there in Luke, and Jesus being in what? Agony. You know, it is the very same Greek word that is translated race in Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12, we're told, run your race with endurance. Using that word, agona. Here, same word, agona, is translated agony. Jesus being in agony. In other words, what it's saying is this, and Jesus being in his race prayed with such fervency that it says that he began to sweat drops of blood. You know, there's a medical condition that is called hematidrosis. That literally, it is a condition where the capillaries underneath the surface of a person's skin begin to burst, and through the sweat glands, blood begins to come out of their bodies. And doctors say that it is likely that this is a condition that is brought on by intense stress. Now, we know Jesus was stressed there in the garden. Here he is staring the wrath of God for the guilt of our sins in the face. He is about to go to the cross. And if there was any a moment that Jesus wanted to quit running this race, this was the moment. "Father, if it is possible for us to save them in any other way, let it be so. Nevertheless, if you want me to finish my race, I will finish this race." And we know what he did. He got up from that prayer knowing full well there was no other way. And Jesus set his eyes to that cross. And he went to that cross. And he finished his race. And that is the Jesus that we're being told to look to. When you get weary, when you're discouraged in your soul, when you feel like you want to drift away, you look to the Jesus who ran his race so faithfully that though he was under so much stress that literally blood was coming out of his pores, that he said, "I will finish this race that my Father gave me." But there's one other thing I want you to see here before we finish out our time together tonight. Going back to Hebrews chapter 12. It says, "For the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, despising the shame." What is that joy? What was the joy that was set before Jesus? That he set his eyes on that enabled him to go to the cross in spite of the shame that he was about to experience. Well, many believe that that joy was fulfilling what his Father had sent him to do. That the Father had sent him to become the sacrifice for the sins of all of humanity. And the joy that Jesus was going to receive was completing that task. And I have no argument with that. I fully believe that that is true. That Jesus would experience tremendous joy in completing the task that the Father had given him. But I think that there's also more to it than that. What was also the joy that was set before him? It was you. It was you. You were the joy that was set before him. He knew that as intense as that race that he had to complete was, that on the other side of finishing that race was the reality that one day you and I, anybody who had given their life to Christ, would one day be ushered into heaven. You know how I know that? The doxology in Jude, verse 24. Now unto him who was able to keep you from stumbling and to present you faultless before the presence of the glory of God with exceeding joy. You know, one day, we're all going to stand before the throne of God. And Jesus, with exceeding joy, is going to present us faultless to his Father. Not because we are faultless, but because Jesus finished his race. And when Jesus finished his race, he opened up the door of heaven to anybody who would trust in him. And that is why we need to look to him. I would imagine that many of you here tonight have gone through periods in your own walk with the Lord where you have been weary and discouraged in your soul. Many of you have already acknowledged that you have had periods of time in your walk with the Lord where you did drift away. Maybe you turned your back on Christ altogether. And maybe even some of you are here tonight because this is the first Sunday of a new year. You've just made a resolution that I'm going to get my life right with the Lord. And that is awesome. I'm glad you're here. But how are you going to stay right? How are you going to keep on track? First of all, I want you to remember that there are a lot of people who have run this race before you. And they struggled. They went through the battle. They suffered a lot. They had to make a lot of sacrifices. Not everything went great for them, but they kept their eyes on the prize. They had their focus right, and they finished their race. Secondly, you might be making this race harder than it has to be. Some of you are right now carrying around sins in your life that nobody else here knows about. But you know about it. And you know that God knows about it. And it is weighing heavy on your heart even right now. Or maybe it's not necessarily a sin, it's that weight, it's that thing. It's that thing that you are thinking about so often, spending so much of your time and money on, and all it's doing is taking your attention and your love away from the things that matter onto the things that don't. And the main thing that it is taking your attention away from is Jesus. No wonder you're weary. No wonder you get discouraged. So what do? Verse 2. Look unto Jesus, the author and finisher of your faith. He started it, he's going to finish it. Who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of God. For consider him who endured such hostility from men, lest you become weary and discouraged in your soul. If you've come in here tonight and you are weary and discouraged, maybe you are kind of at the end of your rope. Look unto Jesus, because if he started a work in your life, he's going to finish it. But maybe there is some work for you to do. Maybe you got to get things right in your own head. You got to get your attention on the things that do matter. Look unto Jesus. And if you need prayer for anything, maybe you need to tonight get things right with the Lord. You know you've been carrying around baggage that is slowing you down, causing you to get weary. And you need to release that. Myself, some of the other pastors and church leaders are going to be down front. We'd love the opportunity to pray for you. But maybe things are going pretty good for you right now. No doubt, there are going to come occasions during this new year. You're going to get weary. It's going to get hard. You're going to go through some tough stuff. Don't forget what Hebrews 12 is telling you. Others have finished their race. You can finish too. If Jesus started a work in you, he's going to finish that work. Keep your eyes on him. Let's pray.